Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. It is Saturday, the day after Veterans Day, and the Saturday after our election. Got a lot to cover with you today. It's going to be a lot different than the rest of the, for the most part, crud you are hearing on, for the most part, any other news or commentary sources. Of course, that's what I do, and I do it for you, and I do it for the country. I'm going to start off, going to give you a little rundown on what we're going to be covering today, because it's different. You know, not all is wine and roses now that Trump has been elected. I mean, I'm delighted that he's been elected, and for many reasons, which I'm going to get into. But it's not all wine and roses, folks. There's some surprises coming. There could be some tempestuous surprises coming. Trump is inheriting just some tough, tough situations that have been put in motion, set in partial stone by his predecessors, particularly Obama, but to a lesser degree Bush, to a lesser degree but still existing Bill Clinton, and in fact going back to George Bush, who was the original participant in climate change, at that time called global warming, with 182 nations in Rio de Janeiro in 1992. I've covered that on the shows. You can dial it up in the search bar. Anyway, I'm going to start off tonight, though, by wishing our veterans from all the wars, you know, whether it was 240 plus years ago, beating the drums and piping on the fife, Yankee Doodle Dandy, to the men and women who are in Afghanistan and Iraq, to my dad, who passed away recently, a member of the Greatest Generation, Sergeant in the United States Army and the OSS, the precursor to the CIA, some unbelievable stories. We owe you a debt of gratitude. And, you know, to some extent, since obviously I know a lot of vets, to some extent, this election was kind of a vindication of at least some of the blood and treasure that this country and all veterans have expended, and the sacrifices that those men and women have made over many years in many conflicts, defending freedom and the right to vote and the right to express yourself. And I don't mean express yourself by this nonsense you see in Portland and New York and Baltimore and Philadelphia. Following Trump's election. Number one, it's paid agitators by our friend George Soros. I talked about that creep both last week and the week before, and I've talked about him prior to that. Type George Soros in the search bar here on the site. You can listen to some of the old shows, and you can certainly listen to the last few weeks' shows if you have missed them. Not a good guy. Not a good American. In fact, he's not even a good citizen of the world. He is a good citizen of the George Soros planet, and that is it. But then again, that's like many uber-left progressives. So, here's what we're going to be covering today. Number one, I'm going to give you kind of a postscript. There's a guy by the name of Bill Bennett, a very well-known commentator, who wrote an article back in February of 2016, quite some time ago. I'm going to read just a couple paragraphs of that because, you know, it was a foreshadowing of what happened on Tuesday. I'm going to remind you, by the way, that I was one of the very few gabbers out there on Radioland, that told you Trump was going to win. I told you from day one Trump was going to win. There were times, to be honest with you, and I shared it with you, I had some doubts. You know, the tangent on the Miss Universe thing and the meltdown on fellow Republicans in between the conventions when he had things going his way. I mean, I was nervous. But I really did think he would win. And not because, as many people say, he's brilliant, he's this, he's that. It's because of us. It's because of the 60 million plus of us who voted for him. And because I know just how pissed off people are and how fed up they are. You know, Michael Moore, who's pathetic. By the way, did you know Michael Moore? I mean, he's not out in the streets protesting with the rest of these juvenile imbeciles. I mean, did you see some of the interviews of some of these people?
Oh, well, I won't be able to have insurance if my parents bland anymore. And then, oh, my tuition. I was going to have free tuition, but now I'm going to have to pay. And
how friggin' pathetic. Buck up, kids. You know what? You've got a silver spoon your whole life. Everything's gone your way. You've gotten your participation trophies, even when you sucked at whatever you were doing, because of the kumbaya, touchy-feely crowds who run your schools into the ground and indoctrinated you. And now, the democratic process, which all you progressives and the party that you ascribe to says is so important, now that should be thrown to the wayside. All right. You know, boy, it gets me foaming at the mouth. I'll tell you what. It is pathetic. I mean pathetic. The pioneers who settled this country, folks. And, you know, when I'm working on ranch projects, we just finished a pond up in one of the projects, which was very difficult to build. In fact, I've done kind of a sequence, and I have one more to put up. I'm a couple days late on it. On the Land for Love and Money Facebook page, www.facebook.com/landloveandmoney/. I believe that'll get you there, or you can just type in Land for Love and Money. And I've kind of given a sequence of photos and all sorts of little tips for building ponds, which I've done, wow, so many I can't remember over the decades on so many ranches. And I love those kind of resource improvements. But in doing those, and in this case it was reconstructing an old pond that was originally hand-dug with shovels and mules by pioneers in the 1800s, and then was redone with, you know, really kind of old-style machinery in the 1950s. And, of course, redone once again and upgraded substantially this summer by us. I am so struck by the grit of our ancestors. Just the pure grit. To go out and tackle projects like these. To build ditches for miles through rocky soil in the mountains. To get water from, you know, a non-perennial, that is, an intermittent spring down to a field to irrigate for 2 weeks. It's just unbelievable. And then you see these crying sops who can't even enunciate their theme other than me, 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 gimme, 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 I'm a victim, I'm a victim, I'm a victim. It just makes me want to puke. Puke. And, of course, the hypocrisy and the anti-democratic, from those who espouse democratic ideas, the anti-democratic themes and actions and chants And then, of course, they're on Trump for foul language. And, you know, if you listen to any of the chants that these people are sending down the canyons of whatever big city the morons are marching down, it boggles the mind. It tells you why Hillary Clinton got 60 million votes, despite her continual, undeniable, I mean, I don't care what side of the fence you on, undeniable deceit and lying and self-indulgent, self-propelling actions at the expense of her countrymen. Hey. Anyway, thanks, vets. What we're going to be covering in this show is Bill Bennett's kind of prognostication way back in February, just a couple paragraphs. We're going to be talking about why the Democrats lost. Not why Trump won, but why the Democrats lost. That's different. And a couple people here and there on Radio Land are talking about it, and I think I saw one couple-minute segment on some TV show somewhere. But I want to throw out some things for you to think about, because it's important. And we're going to talk about Obama's role in that, because it's not being mentioned. Of course, certainly not being mentioned by the mainstream media, who were aghast. And by the way, wretched. Wretched. And I'm going to tell you why all the crap that's going on, these juvenile, moronic, gimme, 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 victim, 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 morons protesting this election, but not protesting, rioting. I mean, creating property damage, hurting small businesses, turning over cars. I mean, unbelievable. We're going to tell you why they lost. And I'm going to fill you in. I've gotten several kind of panicked emails. I even got a phone call from an avid Trump supporter and conservative gal. And she said, is it true that this election could be overturned? There's like this petition that I've heard about of 2 million names circulating from Clinton voters that they want the petition overturned, I mean the election overturned, et cetera, et cetera. Folks, it's going to be a great civics lesson for you and include some things that I forgot, to be honest with you, when I researched it. I want to go over how the Electoral College and the votes that you registered, et cetera, at work, and what those dates are from here until Trump's inauguration on January 20th. I think you'll find it kind of fascinating. And is there a way for somebody to throw a monkey wrench in it? Yeah, you know what? There is. I think the chances are really, 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 really remote. But there's a couple of monkey wrenches that could be thrown in to Trump's election. And I think you'll find them fascinating. And I think you'll find it a hell of a civics lesson or civics reminder for those of you who have followed it in the past. And I'm going to go over the theme of it's not all wine and roses with Trump's election for you. I mean, the guy, listen, he has his own personality defects, don't we all? I mean, if you don't, I don't think I want to meet you because you're delusional. So he has his personality defects. And he has his lack of experience, which could be as strong a positive as his negative, particularly since he has Dan Pence and some other great advisors around him who do know kind of the ins and outs of Washington. But he has some headwinds, and I don't mean the gimme, 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 victim, 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 poor me, poor me, poor me crowds that are out in the street throwing bottles at cops. I'm talking about some headwinds which were put into place over the last 30 or 40 years by 3 or 4 or 5 presidents, and particularly by Barack Obama. And those are not going away. For instance, just as a little teaser before we get to that segment, the chances are very high we will have a recession during his first term. Very high. I've been saying this for a year or two, and I'm going to tell you again, okay? It is just math. It is not Trump's math. He had nothing to do with it. He wasn't even in the damn government. But he's inheriting the math of his predecessors. And, you know, he has to balance the books. Because if you don't balance the books, you're not going to accomplish anything else like growth, economic growth, which is the underpinning to a lot of the solutions he wants to implement. And I might add a significant plank in his platform that got him elected. And I think you'll find that thought process kind of fascinating, and I think I'll bring up some things that you haven't thought about. And then we're going to end. We're going to end with a kind of a comparison of the economic period between 1870 and 1913 before the Federal Reserve was established. The Federal Reserve was established in 1914. And I'm going to give you some comparisons in GDP, GDP per capita, that is the earnings per person, median wage, etc., per person, in those 40 years. That was also prior to the income tax, by the way. And debt per person, that is United States government debt per person, as opposed to now. And I think you'll find it rather fascinating, and it is a very strong indictment of the Keynesian, John Maynard Keynes, the Keynesian economic policies, which mandate that government has to be involved to tweak the economy and keep interest rates low and artificially this and artificially that, and in the case of Obama's government, lie through their teeth about the statistics that result. And it's one of the headwinds that Trump is facing. It's one of the, it ain't going to be all wine and roses, truisms. So let's get started, shall we? Number one, Bennett. The commentator, whom, by the way, is pretty much a Democrat. He's not a Republican. But he is fair. He might be called a Reagan Democrat. Not a lot of those left, except all you fine folks who voted for Trump. Particularly Pennsylvania, Michigan, Ohio, Wisconsin, almost in Minnesota. I'm going to read you just a few paragraphs here. This, I think, was a great foretelling. By the way, I did not read this. I did not get this until when? Let's see. A few months after it was written. And I kind of saved it for the show after the election. That's how sure I was that Trump was going to win. Despite biting my nails a few times. Don't be surprised if Trump has an accident. Some people are getting very nervous. Barack Obama, Valerie Jarrett, Eric Holder, Hillary Clinton, and John Corzine, to name just a few. It is about the unholy dynamics between big government, big business, and big media. They all benefit by the billions of dollars from this partnership, and it's in all of their interest to protect one another. It's one for all, and all for one. Trump has the audacity to ask out loud why American workers always get the short end of the stick. Good question. I'm certain Trump will question what happened to the almost $1 billion given in a rigged, no-bid contract to college friends of Michelle Obama at foreign companies to build the defective Obamacare website. By the way, that tab is now up to $5 billion. Think about that, folks. $5 billion for a website doesn't work. Trump will ask if Obamacare's architects can be charged with fraud for selling it by lying. I think you've heard that on this show before, right? Because it was criminal fraud. Trump will investigate Obama's widespread IRS conspiracy, not to mention Obama's college records. Trump will prosecute Clinton and Obama for fraud committed to cover up Benghazi before the election. How about the fraud committed by employees of the Labor Department when they made up their dramatic job numbers in the last jobs report before the 2012 election? Obama, the multinational corporations and the media need to stop Trump. They recognize this could get out of control. If left unchecked, telling the raw truth and asking questions everyone else is afraid to ask, Trump could wake a sleeping giant. Trump's election would be a nightmare. Obama has committed many crimes. No one else but Trump would dare to prosecute. He will not hesitate. Once Trump gets in and gets a look at the cooked books and Obama's records, the game is over. The jig is up. The goose is cooked. Holder could wind up in prison. Jarrett could wind up in prison. Obama bundler Corzine could wind up in prison for losing $1.5 billion of customer money. Clinton could wind up in jail for deleting 32,000 emails, or for accepting bribes from foreign governments while Secretary of State, or for misplacing $6 billion as the head of the State Department, or for lying about Benghazi. The entire upper-level management of the IRS could wind up in prison. In the last two paragraphs, Obamacare will be defunded and dismantled. Obama himself could wind up ruined, his legacy in tatters. Trump will investigate. Trump will prosecute. Trump will go after everyone involved. That's why the dogs of hell have been unleashed on Donald Trump. Yes, it's become open season on Donald Trump. The left and the right are determined to attack his policies, harm his businesses, and if possible, even keep him out of the coming debates. But they can't silence him, and they sure can't intimidate him. The more they try, the more the public will realize that he's the one telling the truth. How's that for a foretelling by a Democrat back in February of this year, a long time ago? And that leads us right into the next segment, which is why the Democrats lost. Not why Trump won, but why they lost. Number one, folks, they lost because of Obama. Now, if you think, just sit back and think about this for a moment. Over the last two or three days, what have you heard more than anything else? Oh, how the polls were wrong and this and that and blah, 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 blah. I've been telling you for, months that the polls are cooked and rigged, to borrow Donald's words, cooked and rigged. And if you remember that everybody's been talking for the last month and a half about how popular Barack Obama is, particularly for the last quarter of a two-term presidency. 55% approval rating, crow the headlines. Higher than anybody else, crow other headlines. B.S. Barack Obama doesn't have 55% approval ratings. They are manufacturing that out of thin air like they manufacture the jobs numbers, the inflation numbers, the median income numbers, and what about any other numbers you just want to listen to from the media, the establishment, or the government. It is nonsense. Barack Obama's real approval rating is somewhere within a point or two of the vote that Hillary got, folks. It's that simple. Because Hillary was running for his third term. And if 55% of the people approved Obama, and she was running for his third term, and he was out there spewing his BS and lies on the campaign trail, in the smooth manner that he has, guess what? Hillary's vote would have been 54 to 56% of the votes cast. Period. There ain't if, no, ands, buts, or ors on this. The Democrats lost this election for several reasons. The primary reason, and the precipitator of all the other ones, is Barack Hussein Obama. His ideologies, his contempt for little people, his derision of the working class, his snide comments about the bitter clingers to their guns and their religions, which is what they really think, by the way, that comment on his part was like Hillary's comments on the deplorables. Same group of people. Same folks being denigrated by both of them. Two peas in a pod. And two poll numbers in sync with one another. Yep. What does she wind up getting? My producer's looking it up. 43%? Yes. As the Democrats would remind us, but Democrats, I keep saying Democrats, you know, that's really a slap in the face to the few Democrats that are left. There are no Democrats. They're progressives. They've even taken the mask off and called themselves progressives now. And progressives, folks, is just another word for communists. I know people roll their eyes when I say that, and I say it all the time, but it's true. It's true. Their thoughts about capitalism is it's good only to the extent it lines their pockets. Everything else is redistribution, reparations, and retribution. So, let's talk about Barack Obama. Okay, Trump's secret weapon. That was his secret weapon. And I don't know if he knew it. He probably did instinctively. I don't think the Democrats knew it because, you know, the progressives were and still are in love with Barack Hussein Obama because he's progressive in chief. So, you know, the Democratic Party is all lined up and they're screaming and yelling at one another and the gimme, gimme, gimmies and the victims and all those morons in the streets here in these cities. Some of them are shouting down with the DNC. I mean, they're blaming they're blaming basically their own progressive party. And others are blaming James Comey. And others are blaming her campaign manager, Robbie Mook. And others are kind of dancing around the edges of blaming her and John Podesta and the Russians for the WikiLeaks. And, you know, the crying and the whining and the hand-wringing go on and on and on and on. And oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to fall asleep in the middle of this. Anyway, look. This election was portrayed all along as a referendum on Trump. What this election really was, folks, and yes, there was some of that, and there was some of the dislike Hillary, and, you know, there were a lot of things in the mix, but the essence of this election was a thundering repudiation of Barack Obama and his policies. A downright slap down, kick in the butt, out the door, torch it, burn it, get rid of it, of his policies. That's what it was. And for that, I see poetic justice. I feel a sense of kind of self-righteous vindication. In the end, one of the things which contributed to Hillary's downfall was Obamacare, which he did criminally lie about to get passed, along with many other progressives, which he illegally, unconstitutionally deferred provisions of the law on a unilateral basis without congressional approval, trying to put off the inevitable, the 100% increases in premiums and all the rest of the nonsense, which came down literally in the few weeks before this election. You have no idea what satisfaction I take in the poetic justice that one of his major unconstitutional, fraudulent, totally ideological, redistributive policies played a role in Hillary's loss and therefore the elimination. And when I say elimination, I mean there will be almost nothing standing of Barack Obama's 8 years. sometime in the next 90 to 270 days, the next 3 to 9 months, at the end of that time period, we'll talk about it as it goes along. At the end of that time period, folks, Barack Obama's 8 years in office will basically not have existed, except for one thing. There's 15 million illegal immigrants in this country, increasing by tens of thousands a month as people stream in ahead of what they pretty much know is going to be a wall and much more restrictive enforcement, not restrictive immigration policies, but enforcement of immigration laws, which has not occurred really 100% under Bush, certainly didn't occur under Clinton, and has absolutely been thrown on its head like doesn't exist by Obama. That is a long-term lingering problem. And by the way, one of the It Ain't All Wines and Roses bullet points we're going to be going over. In 2009, for those of you who are shaking your head out there in Radio Land, if you don't think this is true, if you really believe that Barack Obama has a 55% approval rating, but his disciple and third term couldn't get more than 43% of the vote, number one, you don't connect dots too well. And number two, you don't know the following stats. Or maybe you don't believe them. Who knows? In 2009, that was Mr. Obama's first year in office, the Democrats held 257 seats in the House of Representatives. From many, 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 many states, quite diverse. After Tuesday, and they picked up a couple seats, after Tuesday, they hold 193 seats. And a third of those 193 seats, folks, come from three states. Illinois, New York, and California. A third. That means less than 100 seats in the House of Representatives are held by the Democrats from 47 states. And who has been president during this precipitous decline? That's right. When Obama took office in 2009, the Democrats had 29 governorships. After Tuesday, it is 15. Granted, there are still ballots being counted in North Carolina. The Democrats controlled 60 of the 99 state legislative chambers. You know, state houses, state senates, every state has a slightly different structure. They controlled 60 of the 99 when he took over. Today they control 30. 30 of 99. Less than one-third. From two-thirds to one-third. That is a huge decline. And who was president during that time period? Oh, yes. Barry. Barry was. In fact, in this last election, the Republicans won the Kentucky State House for the first time in 95 years. That's 9-5. That is almost a century since Republicans controlled the House in Kentucky. And who was president during this time? Oh, that's right. Barry. Barry. You know, in September, if you go back into my shows, and if you don't, that's cool too. I mean, you're missing fun stuff. However, back in September, Obama said when he was just kind of gearing up the campaign stuff that he went like overboard crazy on in October. He said, "My legacy is on the ballot." That's a quote. Quote, "My legacy is on the ballot," unquote. And you know what? That is the truest thing he has said in 8 years. His legacy was indeed on the ballot. And he got his fanny spanked. Fanny spanked. All right. I thought those were some interesting stats, but there's no doubt in my mind that one of Trump's great weapons. Oh, my producer. Yes, you're right. You're right, Miss Producer. There are a few more things here. There were 207 swing counties that went for Obama only once in his two elections. Just one of the two elections. 207 swing counties around the United States. Of those 207 swing counties, Trump won, hold on to your hats, 194 of them. Unbelievable. Have you folks looked at a map of the election? I posted on my Facebook page. It's red from sea to shining sea, other than the immigration areas down in the southwest, and of course the metropolitan areas along the coast, and a little bit of blue here and there around Chicago and Minneapolis. I mean, you can see what it is on the maps in the Front Range of Colorado. Sea to shining sea. From Canada to Mexico, that map is red. I have never, ever seen it so red. And one of the reasons is that stat I just gave you. Trump won 194 of 207 swing counties across the country. And who was the president? Oh, that's right. It was Barry. So, first of all, I'm going to say, thanks, Barry. The chickens, as your old pastor Jeremiah would say, the chickens have come home to roost. Now, there's some other reasons the Democrats lost the election, too. Although, I think I gave you the major ones just now. Number one, they are elite. Okay, they think that all of us are bubbas, bitter clingers, deplorables. They don't even think we're smart enough to pull the right lever in the voting booth. They thought wrong. They have completely discounted, don't believe it exists, believe they've finally trampled out basic American values and culture. They have not, as this election proves. And by the way, they think that because it's so boorish. It's so Neanderthal. It's so passé. It's so non-global that it just can't exist. Because what thinking, feeling, sensitive human being could possibly think like you and me? In their world, nobody. They were a victim of their own elitism. And, you know, they and their cohorts in the media and their cohorts in corporate boardrooms and in meeting establishments and societies and all sorts of crap of the bastions of globalism, they really thought that they were further along on their little plan, on their scheme for global governance, for globalistic kumbaya, the collective rather than the individual programs than they were. You know, if they had kept their mouths shut maybe another 4 years, if they had pretended as they have for the last 30 to really give a damn, they might have done it. Because I'm telling you, if Hillary Clinton had been elected and we had a third term of Barack Obama in the form of Hillary Clinton, and his 8 years of quote-unquote legacy, which is about to be completely dismantled, have been allowed to further ingrain itself in the American system politic like a poison pill, as it was meant to be, I'm not sure we could have recovered. And by the way, it ain't over, folks. Trump's election's just the beginning. If you let down your guard, there'll be another Obama. There'll be another Clinton. And they will run in 2020, and they will win. And we'll be right back to where the hell we are now. Or worse. We're going to be talking about that in coming shows. We were once, you know the old saying, once stupid, twice a fool? Okay, well, those of us who believe in American values, American exceptionalism, and conservative principles, we let our guards down once. We didn't pay attention to how our kids were being educated and indoctrinated. We didn't pay attention to all the little lies and the big lies. We didn't pay attention to all the wasteful spending. We didn't pay attention to all the manipulations of the law and legislative process. We were asleep at the switch. We were doing our thing. That's what we do. Live and let live. Laissez-faire. You can do whatever you want as long as you don't screw with me. That's not how these folks think. These folks think we will do whatever we want, and you will do whatever we want, and screw you. It's two diametrically opposed ways of thinking. But once stupid, twice a fool. We cannot let our guards down again. The enemy, i.e. progressives, are too well financed, too far along in their plan, too ingrained in so many kind of metrics of the system to let our guard down again, because that'll be it. That'll be it. So, next to Barack Obama, I would blame the entire Democratic establishment, the Democratic Party, because, folks, it is not the Democratic Party anymore. It is the Progressive Party. It got so far out of control, so far left, so full of itself, so elitist, so uncaring, so above the law, that literally even us laissez-faire folks, the live and let live crowd, Bubba and the Bitter Clingers, sounds like a good country song, we just couldn't ignore it anymore. I mean, the dog growls and the dog growls and the dog growls, and then he kind of puts his teeth on you, but he doesn't quite leave a tooth mark. And finally, you turn around, you take a stick, and you beat him over the head. And then he doesn't growl anymore. Anyway, I want to remind you, and I am going to give myself a little pat in the back here. Not only did I tell you Trump would win, starting, I believe, about the day after he announced, coming down that escalator, 16, 18 months ago. I also told you that he would get, and everybody else said, oh, he won't get more than 1 to 3%, blah, blah, blah. I told you he'd get 20% of the black vote. And I know some of you out there who are versed on these things go, well, what the hell is he talking about? He only got 7% of the black vote. Number one, I don't think you can trust the numbers. I mean, I'm a little cynical by now. I think I've given you enough information over the years, given you enough prime examples, black and white, of people lying about numbers. Hell, Barack Obama lies about numbers. I mean, he tells you what this, that, and the other unemployment, whatever is, and the stats as he is speaking on his own government website at the Labor Department under U6 says, Mr. President, you're lying. I mean, you can't get more kind of slap in the face than that. But I told you that the black vote would go about 20% for Trump, historic highs. And in fact, he got about 7%, according to most of the, I'm not going to call them reliable polls, to most of the polling places. How's that? 7%. Better than Romney. Better than Bush. But here's the key thing for you, folks. I want you to think about this. Approximately 1.5 to 1.7 million black voters who voted in 2008 and 2012 did not show up to vote. And they were in key precincts. And you know what I think? And I can't base this on any facts. I'm just telling you gut level, common sense, connect the dots. Water flows downhill, 2 plus 2 is 4. Wyoming hayseed logic. They didn't vote because they couldn't quite bring themselves to vote for Trump. Even though the black vote for Trump, while low percentage, was historically high. But they did know that either A, Hillary was a lying crook, who perhaps did not ascribe to some of their social values, or B, the Progressive Party, the Democrats, were lying crooks because after 30, 40, 50 years of Democratic rule in cities like Detroit and Baltimore and Philadelphia, Los Angeles, their plight has worsened dramatically. There's been no promises kept. It's all been lie, lie, lie. Here you go, here you go, here you go. It's time to vote, it's time to vote, it's time to vote. And I think those 1.5 million black folks wisely stayed home. And in doing so, they, in effect, don't you agree, registered a vote. Somebody who did not vote for Hillary was at least a half vote for Trump. So you know what? If you take that 1.5 million, give or take 100,000, black folks who didn't vote, and you add it, and we'll be kind and say the polls are correct, the 7% of black folks who did vote for Trump, you know what you come up with? Wow, 20.8%. So I'm going to give myself a little pat on the back. I think I was kind of right on that. I also told you that he was going to get way more Hispanic vote than was being forecast. Way more. And in the end, and once again, you can't get the right numbers because mainstream media doesn't want to share them and the pollsters want to twist them and the yada, 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 yada. But he got somewhere around 27% of the Latino vote, which is remarkable considering he didn't say really smart things about Latinos. I know what he meant, I think, but it didn't come out like he meant it. He has that problem sometimes. You know, just yesterday, the Wall Street Journal came out and said, oh, when we interviewed Trump, he said he may repeal, replace, modify, blah, 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 Obamacare. Because he's keeping the precondition deal. You know, you can't be dropped for having some type of malady, some type of illness prior to your insurance. And he was also going to keep kids up to 26, including, I suppose, the morons marching up and down the streets, can stay on their parents' policy. He was going to keep those two aspects. And I think what Trump meant, having listened to a number of his speeches, read his platforms and everything else, was those are two elements of Obamacare. Even though Obamacare is going to be thrown out entirely, those are two elements he wants to see in the new replacement plan. I think that's what he meant to say. But in any event, so I got this call from kind of a panicked gal saying, I've heard about this petition, and is there any way for anybody to screw with the election, and blah, 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 blah. Well, yeah, there is, to be honest with you. I don't think it's going to happen. I think there's checks and balances against it, not the least of which is the Army. But yes, it could. Here's some dates for you to remember. November 8th was a general election. December 19th is the meeting of the Electoral College. January 6th at 1 o'clock p.m., the House and the Senate ratify the Electoral College results. And on January 20th at noon, the president-elect, in this case Trump, becomes president. So that you know, under the Constitution, the general election does not directly and immediately decide the president, folks. It only happens when the Electoral College casts their vote on the first Monday after the second Wednesday in December. In this year, that's the 19th. When you vote in your elections, like you did on November 8th, you're not voting for president. You are voting for the electors of the Electoral College of your state. So that you know, under no circumstances can anybody serve a third term or be extended in the position of the President of the United States past January 20th. President Obama's term is over, folks. And by the way, he's no longer protected at that point by the office of the presidency. That is the point at which the word impeach becomes the word indict. Back to the Electoral College. A representative of the Electoral College can, let me underline this, can change their mind and not vote the way they were pledged to vote by the voters of their state. That person, under the Constitution, is then called a faithless elector. A faithless elector. Only 24 of the 50 states have laws that punish faithless electors. Now, obviously, a faithless elector is committing political suicide or worse. But a vote can change or no vote can be given. Some of those 24 states have laws in the books which would void the faithless elector's vote, but others do not. If a candidate is indicted before Congress ratifies the results of the Electoral College, that's January 6th. Remember, the Electoral College votes December 19th. Congress ratifies January 6th. That person could be disqualified, even though they had a majority of the electoral votes, a majority of the electoral count in the general election, and a majority even of the popular vote in the general election. Anyway, you get into some very murky constitutional crisis waters, but in answer to your question, and you know who it is who called, that is the scoop, Betty Boop. Yes, somebody could still screw with this election. And given what Bill Bennett wrote, while the odds are very, 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 very remote, and while there are checks and balances, this has been kind of a crazy election, and the media, big government, the elites, the establishments, and the corporate establishments have trillions on the line. Anything is possible when there are trillions on the line. Now, we're going to get into our next to last segment. God, I've been yakking here for 54 minutes. I can't even believe it. All right. Yes, Ms. Producer, I will be on time, which means I got 6 minutes to cover what I really wanted to cover as the mainstay of the show. Oh, boy. All right. Look, Trump is facing certain things which are kind of cast in concrete. He can soften them. Maybe he can eliminate part of them. Maybe he can eliminate one or two just by a combination of skill, luck, who knows what, entirely. But some of them are going to get him. None of them are his doing. But he's stuck with them. And if Hillary had been elected, she would have been stuck with them. The difference is, I think Donald Trump will try and fix them for the American people, and Hillary would try and fix them for herself while telling the American people what she was doing was for them, a la Barry Obama. A recession during Trump's presidency is highly likely. Interest rates rising during Trump's presidency is highly likely. National primary debt increasing before it begins to decrease, and there'll be a hue and cry and yells and screams and all sorts of fights in Congress over this. Primary national debt will rise in a Trump presidency before it falls. The Russians are going to try, they're going to test Trump just like they would have tested Hillary. God only knows what might happen in the next 73 days, which we're now down to as the most dangerous time period. I've said this for months and months and months. These 73 days, the remaining 73 days of Barack Obama's term, are the most dangerous in American history. Only slightly less dangerous were the last 90 days. They're dangerous because Barack Obama is going to try and sabotage whatever he can and try to put poison pills in the system, which, quote, I quote him, fundamentally transform the United States of America, unquote. He is not going to make it easy for Donald Trump. Forget all this BS about this meeting and the shaking hands and the well-worded but completely unheartfelt speech that Obama gave in the Rose Garden about Trump's presidency. Forget all that crap. These two men hate each other for many reasons. They are on opposite ends of the ideological spectrum. They are opposite ends of the earth on life experiences and in core beliefs. Opposite ends of the earth. Barack Obama is not going to do anything to make it easy for Trump so that Republicans can kind of bask in the glory. He's not going to do it. We have Iran and we have North Korea. Iran, and I don't care what they tell us, folks. All I got to do is read the stuff that comes across my computer and across my desk. Iran is just months away from a bomb anytime they want to do it. And what the Iran deal that, once again, we were lied to about, what the Iran deal did was ensure they would get the bomb. North Korea, of course, has had the bomb, and North Korea and Iran are cooperating. I've done a whole show on this, on missile technology, nuclear technology, you name it. These are two huge threats that have to be dealt with. And how you deal with them could have profound effects. But deal with them you must, because if you don't, they will deal with us. Period. That will happen. There's going to be trade disruption. Because when NAFTA is renegotiated, when TPP goes back to the drawing board to get carved up like a Thanksgiving turkey before it's served back to the other 11 nations that thought, Hillary Clinton would be signing that gold standard of trade deals, as she called it, and then lied about it. And during that process, and in the process of getting tough with China, so that they are finally forced to follow the trade agreements already in effect, there's going to be trade disruption, which will also add to this recessionary event. And then, of course, we have the Paris Accord and the UN Agenda 21 and UN Small Arms Control Treaty and several other things from the UN. I would love to see Donald Trump tell the UN just stick it where the sun don't shine. You want to save money? Let's save that $5 to $10 billion a year we fund those morons who do nothing but try and undermine us, shall we? And we can turn that, you know, this can be part of his inner city plan. The United Nations building there in New York, man, redo it into apartments and condos for folks who need it. How's that? And all those bureaucrats can go, I don't know, they can go have pasta in Italy, whatever. Who cares? Anyway, those things need to be unwound. Fortunately, they're recent, so the poison pills are not yet systemic. The forces of globalism are not going away. They've been wounded, badly wounded, by Brexit, by Trump's election, and, mark my words, I think it's highly likely Italy voting to get out of the EU on December 4th. And they've been hurt by other things, too. Mostly by the mentality of us bitter clingers, you know, Bubba bitter clingers and deplorables. Around the world, not just in America. And then there's the contentions within the Republican Party itself. Do not underestimate the ability of the Republicans to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory, folks. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Trump's policies and what should be implemented, and I'm going to give you a comprehensive list of his policies, including how to handle the immigration deal. I mean, obviously, you've got to stop immigration first, but how to handle all the various holes in the net of immigration. And what to do with the 11 to 15 million illegal aliens currently in the country. I think you'll find it quite fascinating. I'm also going to be going over some things which could be done to get rid of Obamacare and replace it. Replace it. I have always been an enemy of Obamacare. What is going on now, I projected before its passage. Go back in the archives of this show and just type in Obamacare. Listen to those shows and interviews, some of them with national talking heads high up in Obama's staff, who tried to feed me their line of fraudulent crap, and I was having nothing with it. You'll find it fascinating. Let me just put it that way, particularly in context of what's going on now. So, I applaud with all of you Trump's election for many reasons, not the least of which is we should have a conservative to fairly conservative Supreme Court for at least a generation, maybe two. The single most important thing. Number two, because Obama's legacy will be dismantled. If his legacy is a four-legged dining room table, it will be dismantled to the point there are no chairs, there are no legs, there is no tabletop, there are no table sides. Maybe there'll be 1 foot of one leg left. I can't tell you how pleased that makes me. And I think, on a humorous note, I think we are never going to be bored with a President Trump. He is simply not a boring guy. There will always be something going on. And I think also that in terms of security, this guy is going to go out and kick some serious butt. And you won't know about it till the butt kicking's begun or the butt kicking is ended. So there's a lot of great reasons to be very, very pleased. But the biggest of all is that Americans who Americans who believe in the Constitution as the founders intended. Americans with traditional values. The people that are bitter clingers, Bubbas, deplorables, you know, scum of the earth, unredeemable, to quote the left, the progressives. They finally got their act together and voted as the American bloc that they are and always have been. And I'm proud of all of you. Proud of you. I got an email. I'm going to end with this because I'm now 4 minutes over time. So you folks, and I assume somebody can edit this so that the AM folks can get that. You can? Okay, great. So you folks on AM, you'll hear this interjected somewhere in some weird place in the AM broadcast. The last, 6 or 8 minutes of this show, you probably won't hear unless you go to www.ontherightsideradio.com and listen to the last, 8 minutes of the podcast. Please do so. And sorry for being so verbose, but I'm wound up like a clock. Like I'm tighter than a banjo string. All right. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Next week, we're talking about Trump's policies in detail. What he plans to do and what I think he ought to do. And I'm going to bring several of those much further than you have heard anywhere else. Like what the replacement for Obamacare is in detail. What we should do with the illegal aliens now in this country in detail. And I think you'll agree. You have a great week. Go USA.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.